The diversity and colourfulness of these pages deliberately mirrors that of Lewis's own life and work.
This is All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty, your host and the creator of the show. Back in 2013, there was a special event to help honor the life of C.S. Lewis as the 50th anniversary of his death passed. Now in 2016, there is a book just published at the time this episode of All About Jack is posted to especially help those who couldn't attend get a taste of what it was like. My returning guest is Dr. Michael Ward, who was one of the co-editors of this printed reminder of what happened. Welcome back to All About Jack, Michael.
Thank you very much. Glad to be with you again, William.
Well, now, as noted, you're here to share about a book related to the special events in England that happened in 2013 to honor Lewis's life on the 50th anniversary of his death. That book is called C.S. Lewis at Poet's Corner. Peter S. Williams co-edited this with you, and in a little while I'll share a short clip having him reflect on his involvement. That includes the idea of how the book came to be, but let's have you start by telling how, you know, one event can result in a book of almost 250 pages.
Yes, it sounds a bit odd, doesn't it? But it grew like Topsy. It began in a relatively small fashion with one of the canons at Westminster Abbey, Vernon White, getting in contact with me to suggest how the Abbey might hold a lecture, maybe, or a day symposium or something to mark the anniversary of Lewis's death. When I was discussing those ideas with Vernon White, I suggested to him that it might be time to revisit the idea of a memorial in Poets' Corner at Westminster Abbey. So that gave rise to the whole idea of a Thanksgiving service. And so a large part of the book is contains the order of service from that particular Thanksgiving service in the Abbey, along with Rowan Williams's sermon. So that's a section of the book. And then once we'd got the Westminster Abbey events together, not just the Thanksgiving service, but the day symposium as well, it was then thought it'd be advisable to have some reflections upon those Westminster events from the blogosphere, because various people had written up accounts of how moving they found it and how interesting it was. And the musician, the composer, Paul Melor, who wrote the anthem setting to music Lewis's poem Love's as Warm as Tears, he was interested in giving his own reflection on writing that piece of music. So all told, the Westminster Abbey section itself accounts for, you know, many, many pages in the book. But then on top of that, we suddenly realized that there were other events going on in England that week: a day conference at Magdalen College, Cambridge, and a couple of events going on in Oxford. So we thought, might as well try and bring them all together under one set of covers. And of course, you know, the Westminster Abbey events take the lead in the book. They give the book its title. But the Oxford and Cambridge events too are a natural counterpart to that as well. So they give a fully orbed picture altogether of all the events that took place in the United Kingdom to mark the 50th anniversary of Lewis's death. And I think it's, you know, it's a very substantial volume, a very interesting volume. Anyone who is interested in C.S. Lewis will find something of value.
Yes, indeed. I know I enjoyed the copy I was looking at in terms of wide variety. Even if someone, you know, had a chance to attend all the events, I'm sure there were those. It's a great reminder. And for those who maybe didn't get a chance to catch certain ones, then they have a nice way to learn about it and remember it from years to come. Well, as noted, I had Peter S. Williams shared with me some thoughts. Let's hear what Peter had to say about his involvement in the project.
So it was back in 2013 that I was privileged to have a small part in the celebrations in Westminster, London, of C.S. Lewis's 50th anniversary of his death. And there was a day conference about Lewis and apologetics that I took part in a panel discussion on. And then I was able to sit in Westminster Abbey the following day as there was a special service commemorating Lewis and dedicating a memorial to him in Poets' Corner. And it was William Lane Craig, who was also taking part in these events in London, who suddenly asked, has anyone thought of publishing a book commemorating this event? And we quickly realized that none of us had thought of this. And a sort of ad hoc committee was soon appointed to think about this. And I was appointed to edit such a thing and soon joined by my co-editor, Michael Ward, who was playing a large role in these events as well, to try and pull together a book celebrating the 50th anniversary of Lewis's death. And particularly, we called it C.S. Lewis at Poet's Corner because of the Westminster service. And then we decided to pull together other things that happened that month at Lewis's old universities, at Oxford University and Cambridge University. So it took us a while to pull this together, and a lot of different people have contributed to this book, which is very eclectic and broad in its interests, just like Lewis himself was. But that meant there was a lot of different people to interact with and to interact with as an editor. So it's taken us a couple of years to pull together this this book, but it is now published and out there 3 years on from the 50th anniversary, but celebrating C.S. Lewis at Poets' Corner and a wide variety of the things that Lewis was involved in.
Well, now, focusing on the specific contents of the book, we've had a little bit of overview from what you've shared and what Peter had said. Let's tackle the first part, which deals with the symposium itself. What does the reader have to look forward to specifically in this section?
Yes, the symposium relates to the events that took place on the 21st of November 2013. That is the day before the actual anniversary of Lewis's death. And on that day, there were three events that took place at Westminster Abbey. There were two lectures, one by Alistair McGrath, the noted Christian apologist and theologian, and indeed biographer of C.S. Lewis. Alistair McGrath delivered a very interesting lecture on how Lewis told the truth through rational argument. Telling the Truth was the overarching title for the symposium. Indeed, it was the overarching title for the whole autumn program that Westminster Abbey's educational wing were putting on. So Alistair McGrath kicked off the day with telling the truth through rational argument. And then Malcolm Gait, the chaplain from Cambridge, the poet, the musician, a very fine speaker, he took us in a slightly different direction, telling the truth through imaginative fiction and how Lewis combined his reason and his imagination so ably and fruitfully in his poetry and his fiction. Both talks were good, but I think Malcolm's was particularly effective, and it really excited everybody present on that day and really caught the mood and I don't know, struck a chord. It was a fine talk, and I'm very pleased that that's in the book. Then in the evening of that same day, we had a panel discussion, which I chaired, and on the panel were five experts on Lewis and apologetics to discuss his apologetic legacy in the 21st century. The panelists were Jeanette Sears, who's got a long-standing interest in the Inklings and is an Anglican theologian. Judith Wolfe, an Oxford professor. She was then an Oxford professor. She's now gone to St. Andrews University. She's sometime the president of the Oxford Lewis Society, and she edits the Journal of Inkling Studies. Then there were, on the other side of the panel, there were Peter S. Williams, my co-editor, who's the author of C.S. Lewis versus the New Atheists. There was Michael Ramsden, who's the director of the Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics. And then there's the noted American apologist, William Lane Craig. So between the five panelists and me, the chairman, we had a good discussion. We took questions from the floor. People submitted written questions ahead of time. And there were also two live questions from the floor from the president of the C.S. Lewis Foundation, Stan Matson, and a representative of the Wade Center at Wheaton College, Jerry Root. So I thought it was a good idea to have those two figures, Stan Matson and Jerry Root, representing their institutions, so that, you know, two very important American Lewisian institutions were represented. And then the evening came to a close with the recitation of a poem, The Apologist's Evening Prayer, one of Lewis's finest poems, which was read aloud by Don King. And Don King from Montreat in North Carolina has recently edited the new collected edition of Lewis's poetry. And given that Lewis was about to be memorialized in Poets' Corner at Westminster Abbey, it seemed to be highly appropriate to conclude this discussion of his apologetics with his great poem about the perils that Christian apologists face. So all told, it was, I think, quite a broad-based and successful and thought-provoking evening, and not without some humour too. Michael Ramsden turned out to be a very witty man. and I think the transcript of that panel discussion gives a good flavour of the whole event. And even if people weren't there, they should be able to get a good sense of what it was like.
Indeed, yes, I enjoyed seeing those things in print. The videos, of course, are online, but it's great to have it there in one place to be able to browse through and read at your own pace. Quite enjoyable. Well, now that the second part you've made mention of here, this is the part of the actual memorial service. It's really just one chapter, but it includes more than just Rowan Williams' address. Can you go ahead and give us the details of what all this chapter and part has?
Yes. The second part of the book is the order of service. The Dean of Westminster Abbey, John Hall, gave us permission to reproduce the order of service. It was a lovely little booklet that the Abbey put together for the service, with the Abbey coat of arms on the cover and a good picture of C.S. Lewis, which is also, in fact, the picture on the front cover of the book now. But you see it in slightly more detail in the order of service. You see that it's actually a signed photograph. You can see Lewis's signature in this reproduced order of service. The order of service also contains, you know, all the music, the hymns, the words of the hymns, and indeed the tunes of the hymns. It contains all the readings from Scripture that were read aloud by Francis Warner, Lewis's last pupil, and by Helen Cooper, his successor as Professor of Medieval and Renaissance English at Cambridge. They were the two readers. It contains all the prayers. The prayers were given by all sorts of representatives of little corners and quarters of Lewis's life, the chaplain of Magdalen College, Cambridge, a representative from Magdalen College, Oxford, the rector of his home church in Belfast, the vicar of the church in Oxford where he worshipped and where he's buried. All those people came for the event and participated in this way by saying the prayers. Douglas Gresham, Lewis's stepson, his younger stepson, read aloud a passage from The Last Battle. That's in the order of service too. And there are also some photographs in the book of the moment of the unveiling and indeed of the memorial itself. So if you weren't fortunate enough to be at Westminster Abbey on the 22nd of November 2013, you can at least get a good sense of what the service was like by reading through this whole order of service and indeed by reading the sermon that Rowan Williams gave on that occasion.
Yes, indeed. It was quite fascinating. I definitely enjoyed being able to vicariously live that event that happened 3 years ago, even though I wasn't there. Well, now the third section may seem odd to some to include. You made a reference to it briefly at the beginning here. Mention the people that you have here in the chapter, and again, why you felt it was important for it to be part of the book.
Yes, well, there are various reflections on these Westminster commemorations in the third part of the book. There are three pieces by those who were present. They immediately got online and blogged about their reflections and their experience of the day, and they were well written and moving and interesting pieces by Jeanette Sears, one of the panelists, by Holly Ordway, my colleague at Houston Baptist University, and by Sarah Clarkson, who's currently the president of the Oxford Lewis Society. And they took significantly different angles on the whole event. And we thought these reflections were part and parcel of the whole week, not just the events themselves, but how people responded to the events. So those three pieces from the blogosphere went in, as did a piece by the Mystery Worshipper from the Ship of Fools website. The Ship of Fools website has this feature which it sends mystery worshippers to churches up and down the country, and they write reports on the services. And the reports are published anonymously. The churches concerned don't know that they're being mystery worshipped. The only sign that they've had a mystery worshipper present is that a business card is left in the collection plate. And we weren't actually aware, the organisers weren't actually aware that the service at Westminster Abbey was going to be mystery worshipped. So we were interested to see what the mystery worshipper made of it on the Ship of Fools website. And it was a very positive and interesting and indeed somewhat amusing write-up, as they tend to be. So we thought we'd include that as well. And then as we were putting all these reflections together, it occurred to me that the composer, Paul Milo, whom I mentioned earlier, who had attended the service, he didn't just write the music, he came to hear the premiere of the music that he'd written, that he might himself like to say something about the process of putting that anthem together. So I rang him up and interviewed him for an hour and wrote up his responses in a short little, you know, it's only a 3-page essay about his own thoughts on composing Love's As Warm As Tears for the occasion. If you ask me, that's one of the nicest little bits in the book. It's very personal, very unexpected. It's got some intriguing little personal details about Paul Milo and about his own background. The fact that he ended up writing this anthem is really providential. It just chimes in with some of his early experiences very, very meaningfully. I'm not going to say any more about that because I want people to read the book.
Exactly.
That is, I think, perhaps in a way, my favorite part of the book. Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, that's a nice, very special treat to have in the book as well. Well, now the fourth part of the book, which again is called simply C.S. Lewis at Poet's Corner, is something that I don't believe was previously available online. We could easily probably spend an entire podcast highlighting all the six chapters. Go ahead, either summarize a couple a lot or give us a grand overview of all six.
In part four of the book, we have all the proceedings of the day conference at Magdalen College, Cambridge, which took place on the 23rd of November 2013. So all of us who had been at Westminster on the Thursday and the Friday that week, well, many of us at any rate, went off to Cambridge on the Saturday for this day conference, which was to discuss Lewis's legacy as a literary critic and as an intellectual figure. And the six speakers were Rowan Williams again. He had preached at the Abbey the day before. Now he was back in Cambridge, where he's now a master of Magdalen College, Lewis's old college. Rowan Williams gave a fine talk on Lewis's book on John Milton, Preface to Paradise Lost. Then we had a piece by the medieval scholar Ad Putter. He was writing on the Allegory of Love, on the Allegory of Love. Helen Cooper, who had also participated in the Abbey service, like I just mentioned, she read one of the scripture readings. She was then Lewis's successor as Professor of Medieval Renaissance English at Cambridge. She's retired now, but she was then still in post, and she gave a talk on Lewis as a medieval scholar. Malcolm Geit was there again. He had been one of the lecturers on the Thursday. He was here now and one of the lecturers on the Saturday. But this time he was speaking about Lewis's book, The Abolition of Man. Then we had Stephen Logan, another Cambridge figure. He teaches English at the University of Cambridge. He wrote a very intriguing piece about Lewis from a more psychoanalytical perspective. And then the day was wrapped up by Stephen Prickett, the literary scholar, who was giving an overview, really, of Lewis's criticism, his fiction, and his theology, and saying how it all cohered and is united. Lewis is not, you know, he's not schizophrenic. There are not three or five Lewises. He's all one man. But you need to perceive the unifying themes in Lewis, and that was what he was trying to bring out. Anyway, of those six talks, my own favorites, I think, are Malcolm Guite on The Abolition of Man. That's a really meaty and provocative piece. Balanced. It's not uncritical, but its criticisms are made from a very much a point of view of friendship and constructive criticism about the abolition of man. And I think Rowan Williams' piece on Paradise, the preface to Paradise Lost, is also a very fine piece. I mean, Rowan Williams is a world-class scholar in both theology and literature, and to get his reflections on Lewis, on Milton, that was just a very rich feast. I think, in a way, if you're a Milton scholar, at any rate, that piece would be worth the price of the book alone.
Yes, and all these addresses, as I think I said at the start of this question, I did especially enjoy this fourth part. Of course, for those who maybe didn't get a chance to see the videos that were available, and I believe probably still are, it's even better to have the book version. They may enjoy that first part especially, but having been familiar with that already, it was like, oh, here's something new, since didn't see anything about the Cambridge conference. So having these essays, especially together in one place, is definitely very, very valuable.
Yes. And well, indeed, there's a little extra bit in section four that wasn't even available in Cambridge on that day, because Stephen Logan, he had written a poem to mark the 50th anniversary of Lewis's death, and that wasn't recited on the day, but it is now included in the book. Malcolm Guite has two of his own poems in the book, and there's a third, as I say, from Stephen Logan. So I'm very pleased that one of the things that the book contains is poetry, new contemporary poetry by some of the contributors themselves. It's not just Lewis's poetry, or Lewis as a poet, but modern poets writing poems about Lewis. So that's another nice little aspect of the story.
Ah, yes, indeed. Well, now the final section then, the fifth part, contains the Oxford addresses to close out the book. What can the reader find here?
Part five, the Oxford addresses, contains two pieces. The first is by William Lane Craig. This is a talk he gave at the Oxford Lewis Society that week, on the Tuesday of that week. William Lane Craig is a very distinguished and learned philosopher and Christian apologist. And his address to the Lewis Society that week takes a very high-level philosophical perspective. If you're a philosopher, if you're a fan of William Lane Craig, you will love this. It's a little bit esoteric, I dare say, for the average reader. I myself am no philosopher, and even I find this a bit hard going, but it's certainly interesting, and it will appeal to those who operate at that level. But if you're a more general reader, the next piece and the final piece in the entire book will be more your cup of tea, and this is a very personal reflection by Walter Hooper, who was Lewis's secretary in the last months of Lewis's life, and of course over the last 50 years has dedicated his whole life to editing Lewis's works and writing books about Lewis, co-authoring the initial authorized biography with Roger Lanceling Green. There's no one who knows more about Lewis in the world than Walter Hooper. So he's just reflecting on his first encounter with Lewis and on some of his reminiscences about that relationship. It was a brief relationship, but it was, an absolutely central relationship in Hooper's life. It has directed the whole course of his career as a Lewis scholar. So that's a nice way, a very personal way on which to round out the book. And then there are some recommended resources. There's a bibliography and an index, as you would expect. So the book has a full apparatus and is easily searchable. If you want to, hunt down particular themes or particular persons, the index will allow you to do that. I mentioned that because I spent about 2 weeks putting together the index myself, and I wanted to make it good and useful, because good indexes help sell books.
Yes, very, very helpful. I'm glancing at that now as you're noting that. So, yes, it's a very good book. I did especially enjoy the part of with Hooper. I had seen in various different reflections or read them, heard them, and whatnot. But it's a good piece here. Overall, again, for the book, individuals that maybe aren't too familiar with Lewis, this is a great introduction. Or those who are very familiar with them, with him, then this is also, you know, a very good resource as well. Now, what would you say maybe was any most interesting or unusual experience that came out as a result of putting helping to put this book together?
Well, as I mentioned, one particularly nice thing was the Paul Naylor interview. Paul Naylor is a you know, one of the leading British composers of the day. He wrote the motet for the royal wedding, you know, the Prince William's marriage to Catherine Middleton back in 2011. He wrote a new motet for that wedding, which was heard by 2 billion people at that royal wedding. So it was great to have his involvement. That was a particular personal pleasure. I'm very pleased that the photograph from the Order of Service is featured twice, as I mentioned, not only in the book itself, but it serves now as the front cover of the book too. And that's a photograph that was purchased at auction a few years ago by Steve Beebe, the professor of communication at Texas State University. It's a very interesting photograph showing Lewis looking up from his books, but it's autographed. It has his signature on it too. Perhaps it may be, I think, the only autographed photograph of Lewis known to be in existence. Anyway, I mention that not only because it's a good photo, but because it's nice that Steve Beebe himself, who's quite a prominent figure in the Lewis world, he was able to kindly, you know, allow us to make use of that photograph. So it's nice to have Steve's input there. You know, one of the things I was trying to achieve, as I mentioned, not only at the symposium in the panel discussion, but throughout the whole putting together of the book, was to try to draw the threads together of the Lewis world and allow every voice to be heard or every person to contribute in their own way. Because although it was a British event and although it was set in an Anglican context, I wanted it to be as much of an international thing as possible. So these little tributaries, I think, help bring that about. One of the more interesting things about the book, I think, is simply that as we were putting it together, we were just sort of taken aback once again by Lewis's breadth of interests. You know, we've got theology, we've got philosophy, we've got literary criticism, literary history, fiction, poetry, in personal interactions. He led such an interesting life and wrote on so many different subjects. That we found almost sort of unconsciously that we'd touched all the corners of his own output, although, you know, these various commemorations had touched the various corners of his output. So sometimes in books of this kind, where you've got lots of contributors, the editors try to make an effort to give it a theme or a uniformity. We decided not to even attempt that. We just thought, let's rejoice in the variety, in the heterogeneity of Lewis's output, as reflected in all these diverse pieces. So perhaps I could quote you a paragraph from Peter Williams's preface to the book, because this, I think, gives a nice sort of summary of what readers will get from the book. So this is what Peter Williams says in his preface. Altogether, these different contributions present a detailed picture of the way Lewis was commemorated in the United Kingdom on the 50th anniversary of his death. Their generic variety, interview, address, panel discussion, homily, article, lecture, personal memoir, poetry, aptly reflects the breadth of Lewis's own output. The numerous fields of expertise represented by our contributors, theology, pastoralia, apologetics, literary criticism, literary history, philosophy, psychology, biography, journalism, music, creative writing, reflects not only the broad sweep of his own interests, but also the extraordinarily wide reach of his legacy. Editors of collected volumes like this one often try to impose uniformity on disparate perspectives in order to thematize their materials. We make no such attempt, but rather consider it a virtue that what follows is so very various. The diversity and colourfulness of these pages deliberately mirrors that of Lewis's own life and work. For, as the inscription on his memorial bears witness, he did not just believe in Christianity, but also in everything else. And just to repeat the quotation, which I'm sure your readers are familiar with, but this is on the memorial itself, and that's what we're alluding to there in Peter's preface. "I believe in Christianity," Lewis said, "as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else."
Yes, very appropriate. Well, now then, to wrap up, Michael, where can people get a copy of C.S. Lewis at Poets' Corner? And then also, where can they find you online?
Yes, thank you. The book is published by Wipf and Stock, a publisher's based in the northwest of America. And so you can get it from the Wipf and Stock website, where I think you can obtain it slightly cheaper than on Amazon. But of course, it is available on Amazon. Those are the two places then to go, the Wipf and Stock website and Amazon. And, you know, of course, hopefully there are such things still in existence as bookshops. Maybe your local bookstore has it. That would be good. And then where can you find news about me? I've got two websites, michaelward.net. That's my work website, which gives details of my writing and speaking engagements. And I've got a website called planetnarnia.com, which is devoted to my book, Planet Narnia, and indeed to the Narnia Code book and DVD. So michaelward.net, planetnarnia.com.
All right. And of course, I'll have those links in the show notes for you, as well as getting the book directly from the publisher or on Amazon. Well, Michael, it's been a pleasure to have you on All About Jack again. This book here, C.S. Lewis at Poets' Corner, is a great achievement. It's a great way for people to experience the event if they didn't attend it, or even if they did, to experience it again with the five different sections that give a wide variety of things that happened, not just at the symposium and the memorial service, but the other events as well. Excellent piece, and some special things like you were noting with the original poetry to honor Lewis. Well, thanks again, Michael, for being on All About Jack.
Oh, my pleasure, William. Thank you very much indeed for helping me promote this book, because, I mean, it was a real privilege to be asked to head up the Westminster commemorations. It took, you know, many months of planning and preparation. And it was, you know, a major highlight of my own life, actually. And so it's been a particular pleasure to be able to bring the book to birth as well, as a kind of permanent record of that lovely occasion. So I'm very grateful to you for bringing it to the attention of your listeners.
And I trust you, the listener, will be grateful for such a fine resource as what I had Dr. Michael Ward share today on the podcast. As C.S. Lewis and Poets' Corner is a fine volume you'll want to consider getting. As noted already, it can help those who couldn't attend the events in 2013 to indirectly experience them. And if you had the privilege to go to any of the events mentioned, then it's a great way to refresh your memories of it. There were a few places mentioned to visit online. You can find direct links to them in the show notes. In addition to the places to buy the book and to find Dr. Ward online, I've also included a link to help you locate other interviews where Michael was my guest, and this includes a series on his book, The Narnia Code. You can find those show notes either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The Podbean location is where the podcast is most easily found. Again, that's AllAboutJack.podbean.com. The other location, EssentialCSLewis.com, provides links back to where the audio files are located, but it also has other features which include a variety of articles related to Lewis, and these are a daily fact and quote, along with a series exploring quotations attributed to Lewis that may not be by him. At the time this podcast is posted, the most recent feature shows have been a couple of essay chats that had not been previously shared at the Podbean location where my audio files have been hosted now for just less than 2 years. In addition to my weekly feature show, I also post previously released podcasts on my iTunes feed that you can also find at the Podbean address. If you don't know how to find the show on iTunes, then be sure to check the show notes for a direct link. Again, those notes can be found either at EssentialCSLewis.com or AllAboutJack.podbean.com. Finally, my book, C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters, is available online at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. You can learn more about it by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com.